Welcome to Highway Diary, episode 166. Shep Kelly.
Shep Kelly's in the building.
So we are outside the Howlin' Wolf at Comedy Gumbo on a Thursday in New Orleans.
Yes, this is happening.
I just had a headlining set. That was fun. Good times.
Yeah, you killed it. I'm telling you, hashtag street nip, everybody. Seriously, hashtag street nip.
All right. So, you are a comic. I think I've known you about a little over a year now in New Orleans. But before that, you were in the military.
Yes.
You were deployed.
Let me do a little bit of background information for the people right quick.
All right.
I am a female comic, often mistaken for a transgender, but there's no transfer happening here. Just really butch, lesbian, black female comedian. I guess we call that a bull dagger. And I was in the military. My shoulders are big. I did 1,000 push-ups a week. It was great.
Whoa.
My transition, actually, my military experience was a had a huge impact on the fact that I wanted to become a stand-up comic because I had a huge chip on my shoulder just serving our country, you know, freedom wins, you know, making sure everybody's safe, all that, life on the line. But when I got back to the States after my active duty, I felt like American citizens just didn't give a... Can I cuss?
Yeah, of course.
Fuck. American citizens just didn't give a fuck.
About the sacrifice.
About the sacrifice, about each other, about, you know, togetherness, about all that stuff. Because, I mean, I had served in countries where they wouldn't normally be considered third world countries, but they kind of were. Like, in South Korea, they don't have, like, a real septic system. It's kind of like a hole in the bathroom, and it kind of just goes out under the street, uncovered, to the rice paddy. So you could catch hepatitis walking down the street on the sidewalk. Horrible. And we just got two of the biggest trucks coming down the street, but I think it was great sound effects for the horrible stuff I was describing. All right, fast forward to me wanting to become a stand-up comic. I actually didn't have a real desire to become a stand-up comic. I was a class clown in school, but I felt like I needed an outlet in life. Like, you know, enough with the bitches and the alcohol. I need to find something constructive to do with my time. So, you know, just because God's a comedian, I bought a... condo that happened to be in a development that was right next to a shopping center development that had a comedy club in it. It was called LOL, and it was in Temple Hills, Maryland, which is a part of the DC comedy scene. I watched probably 200 shows before I actually decided to do it, and it took a lot of coercing from the local comics because just of the conversations that we used to have. They would say, you're funny, you should tell your story, yada, yada, yada.
You would just go there all the time.
Just go there, just drinking, laughing. I felt great. You know, $5 to get in, 2-drink minimum. Much better than $40 cover at a club, $25 to park for people I didn't even know or like. It was great.
Yeah.
And so when I first started, a comedian named Gigi Wong out of D.C., she used to braid my hair when I had cornrows. And she was a comedian. I went to a couple of her open mics, and she... you know, put my name on the list without me knowing. That's how it happened. I drank maybe 4 Heinekens, and I told 2.5 jokes. And that night I got booked for a weekend set at a comedy club, and it just kept going from there. I really don't even think I actually made the decision to be a stand-up comic. I just kept getting booked. That's what happened. You know, it was great.
And so now, when did you move here?
I moved here a year ago. From Washington, D.C. I'm originally from Miami. And I moved here a year ago. And this place is amazing. I mean, I love New Orleans. I mean, like, I should have moved here way sooner, like, after 2005, after Katrina. But, you know, still way sooner than I did. And I love it. I love this place. Like I said, everybody's warm. Even the people who hate me love me. I'm having a great time. I mean, life is easier. Life is simpler. You know, it's cheaper cost of living. But as far as my comedy career goes, I will say that this is one of the places that I would consider like a goals gym. You know how you can get a gym membership and like at Planet Fitness, $10. But you're in there. Everybody's in there. They're having seminars, fucking workout classes. You got Jane Fonda's. I mean, seriously, it's 80-year-old bitches that...
So you're developing here.
Yes.
It's
but
a place to work out.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than a workout. It's like where you get the big muscles because you have so much working out.
So do you think that you'll, like, move to, like, New York or L.A. eventually?
Hell
you're just working
no.
out here?
Hell no. My concept on that, my perspective on that is It's just, you're just putting yourself in a bigger pond, which isn't good. Like, if you want to get caught, like, if you're a fish that wants to get caught, you want to put yourself in a smaller pond, make yourself more appealing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's true, though. I think, from my experience, I've lived in New York, I've lived in L.A., I've lived here now. I think, yeah, you have to get, you're going to get, like, a TV show development deal in either New York or L.A., and that's it.
No, I beg to differ with you, and here's why. A lot over the past 5 years, more movies have been filmed in New Orleans.
Yeah, but the deal, they come here for the tax credit, and the deal gets made in New York or L.A., and they come here for the tax credit.
Maybe the deal does get made, but they come here and find people off the street. I mean, there's like a tattoo guy who played in like maybe 8 episodes of the Queen Sugar series simply because he's a well-known tattoo artist here. I'm going to tell you why I feel that way, too. I've been, like I said, to L.A., to New York, and all those things. And there is a huge, I mean, let's just say, for shits and giggles, proportionately, there are 1,000 comics. 3 of them get deals. Now, what happens to the other 997? They become bitter.
Now, they write for those shows that the 3 comics make.
Maybe 15 of them do.
But they get something.
I just don't feel like it's the way out. I feel like the way out of New Orleans, or the way out of a smaller town when you're any kind of talent, is to build up your chops where you have a comfortable environment. Because what you're not counting into the equation, I think, just my personal opinion, is the fact that everybody's already famous in their own mind in L.A. and New York and D.C. and all these places. So when you come in, let's say, for instance, you feel like being a stand-up comic or you have a singing voice, more people are trying to bat you down as opposed to rise you up in those places. But places like this, where you have an idea, you know, you say, hey, I want to be the person that writes the white lines on the pavement, on the streets, somebody will say, well, I have a buddy who used to do that or who has paint, and they will push you up.
Yeah, but I mean, here, living here, you know, I got banned from the Hi-Ho twice, you know what I'm saying? I've never been booked on a show, despite all the times I've done well, you know what I mean?
There's like, I mean, I think that's,
I used
that's
to more have on my wall, like, all the places that I've never been booked, and it was a long list.
But I feel like that's more of a personal experience as opposed to an overall experience. Because here's why. I've been booked at the Hi-Ho. And I'm not saying I'm any better than you or anything like that. But I just feel like I didn't put a list on my wall. Because yeah. The Hi-Ho is a great place. Don't get me wrong. The shows are great. But it's not on my bucket list. I'm just doing Shep. I feel like the more you do you, the better off you'll come out. No matter where you're at.
I just got to focus on myself, be the best. Be like a real.
I feel like the set you gave tonight is a bookable set.
Right.
Right? But I'm not saying that all your other sets weren't worthy. I'm just saying that the set you gave tonight was a bookable set. Like, for instance, if I just opened a room, or I just had, you know, booking rights on some huge venue, I totally would have came in tonight and been like, that guy. That's the guy I want. Off the set I saw tonight. You know what I'm saying?
Well, also, you know, you always, you've told me that you like my cat gender joke, so I did that shit today, because I saw you about it.
This is true.
I like little anchors of encouragement in the room.
But that's
when
the thing.
Someone tells me they like a set or a joke, then I'm like, oh, you're in the audience? Let me do that.
I don't mean to flip this interview, but where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey.
You're from New Jersey. So in New Jersey, it's the land of the hard knocks, right? It's the land of, you know, if you're not getting yours, you have a personal problem with the rest of the world. That's the kind of place it is. It's a hard knock city. So I personally would say I'm no therapist, I'm no, you know, counselor or nothing like that. But I personally would say that might be the way you feel, the reason you feel the way you do about New Orleans. Because I'm telling you, I have been at some of the highest stages. As a matter of fact, I got a, you know, this is a shameless plug, I got a booking for the females, or I'm sorry, Funny and Stilettos tour in D.C. March 19th at the Howard Theater. But I've been at some of the bigger venues in D.C. And I'm telling you, the road to get there, I basically had to sell some ass to get them.
Word?
This is true.
You were fisting people?
Basically had to sell some ass, I'm telling you. But here, it's a totally different story. It's if you are working on your craft and just doing you, and the people that notice just pick you up. Like, this is, New Orleans reminds me of old school, how I pictured it comedy, where people actually come and handpick you and put you on. And it has more to do with than your actual talent. It has more to do with just your personality, your outlook on things. Like, so for instance, if you rub too many people the wrong way here, that could be detrimental. In D.C., the object is to rub people wrong. In New Jersey, the object is to rub people
wrong. Yeah, that's the thing. I do feel like there's, like, some cultural shit going on where I'm like, cool, you told me to... You know, it's like, if someone says that they don't like me to my face, I really feel like I have no reason to ever talk to them again.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just like, yes, oh, so I know that you were just angry at that moment.
Right.
So let me just pretend nothing happened and sweep it under the rug and kiss your ass until you book me. And I'm not down with that. I'm
I
like,
feel you. I
well,
told
you tell me you don't like me? Name. Cool. Goodbye.
So
I'll
you're
never
a
talk to you
you're
again.
A comedic serial killer.
Dude, I just keep...
I'm telling you, serial killers write lists.
I don't have a list so much as, like, just when if you're a comic in New Orleans and you tell me that you don't like me, I will never... Unless you apologize, that's on you, bitch. I'm just going to be better than you.
Right.
That's what motivates me to be better at stand-up.
And that's... I'm telling you, that's that cutthroat New Jersey situation, man. I'm trying to tell you, I have traveled the world. And I mean the world, you know, with the military. And I will say I've encountered a lot of different people, a lot of different cities, a lot of different cultures. And I'm not saying I know better than you, but I am saying that it's easy for me to identify how a person will react to me or to life based on where they're from or where they're used to being. And I'm telling you, that New Jersey, I have a ex-girlfriend right now who thinks that we are in a relationship and we broke up in 2003. She is from New Jersey. What I my main idea for even
that makes sense to me
for even bringing that up is the fact that it's the way that it is. It's cutthroat. She wants what she wants, and regardless of what it actually is, that's what she wants.
Right.
So
my mom's kind of like that.
Exactly. I'm telling you. It's
Can
cutthroat.
I tell you a story about my mom?
Sure. Let's do it.
So my sister got married,
mm.
and my mom goes, "Okay, so I'm gonna pay for the photographer, but then here's all the pictures I want. I want to walk down the aisle under the gazebo, and then I want this picture where I'm pinning a flower on your husband's chest, and then I want this picture." And my sister's like, "Okay, you said you're handling the photographer, handle it, and don't call me every day telling me what kind of pictures you want."
Right.
And
exactly.
Second of all, don't walk in front of me at the fucking wedding. Because that would steal my thunder. It's my night, bitch, not yours.
Exactly.
So then it got super awkward because at the rehearsal dinner, my mom like does this thing where she's like, "So anyway, I'm going to walk before you down the aisle and get the picture." And then I was like, I knew the whole story. And also my sister's pregnant at the time. She's fielding these calls. She has morning sickness. My mom would call her, ring, ring, ring. My sister's like, blah, 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 throwing up. And she's
Damn.
Like, "So these are the pictures I want. I want those pictures, those pictures, those pictures."
Then.
You're driving her fucking crazy.
And that's how it is. So sometimes, I guess...
Hold on, though. At the rehearsal dinner, though, I'm like, "Ma, you're not going to walk in front of my fucking sister. It's her fucking wedding. Sit the fuck down." That's how awkward it got. Right? Her husband goes up to me after that. He's like, "What the fuck are you doing? Yelling at your mom in front of my family. It's weird." I'm like, "Watch what happens." The wedding happens. Everyone's sitting down. Do you know who's not? My mom. The music starts playing. She bursts through the fucking doors, walks in front of my sister at the wedding. She's told not to a billion times. Doesn't give a fuck.
Oh.
Walks down the aisle, gets her picture. The photographer who she paid for is her cohort who's there taking the pictures. Ruins the shit. But then my sister walks down the aisle and the wedding starts. But it's like, okay, cool. It's your wedding. That's great. I'm going to walk down the aisle before you. New Jersey.
Yep, that is New Jersey. So I guess the both of us have kind of come up with a solution, or maybe not a solution,
a
but
diagnosis.
A diagnosis for this situation.
I want to do stand-up.
I understand that. And this is...
I want to get booked on shows.
And you want to get booked on
shows.
I want
to look pretty and walk down the aisle.
I got that, but I'm telling you, the easiest way to do it is through networking. And I mean friendly networking. If you have to go to Memphis and open up for somebody and drive your ass back home, that will open up 12 doors for you faster than being at the Howling Wolf with a high hole on your wall talking about, "I haven't got booked here."
Yeah.
I'm trying to tell you, there's always different ways.
You.
I mean, I love this place. Don't get me wrong. I do. But one thing I've learned about New Orleans in the year that I've been here is If people fuck with you, they fuck with you. If they don't, they don't. There's nothing you can do about it.
I feel like the first impression was made on me, and some people were like, no, no, no. And other people were like, yes, yes, yes. And that's it. And that's how it stayed. Instead of my merits as a stand-up, winning people over is impossible. Yeah. Because some people already made their decision.
Well, I'm not going to get into, semantics, personal semantics with you. But I will just say my personal experience with you, I kind of feel like, just here recently I started feeling like maybe a little wedge with you. Just a little bit. Because I was so used to the easygoing flow. This is the Big Easy. Don't call it that for nothing.
What's with his
brain? I'm like, why is he crying? He's the only one crying. What's wrong? And it's like, it's the only thing I saw like recently. But here's the deal. I still don't give a fuck. And it's in a good way. I don't go to work or wake up daily thinking, what the fuck was going on with Eric Hollaback? You know what I think is? I had a great fucking time last night. Maybe I'll see Eric Hollaback next week. That's it. And that's the attitude you got to keep in New Orleans. That's it.
What's up, Moxie?
We're doing a motherfucking podcast.
Yeah, we're doing
Moxie
a podcast
and this
right
bitch.
Now. How's it going,
How you
Moxie?
Doing? You got to say something. People think we're talking to an imaginary person.
What's up, people? It's Moxie G. Rogue.
Boom. We're in there.
See? In here.
Yeah. So, we're having a good time. Like, we're doing a... And so we're supposed to be talking about my military experience versus...
Yeah,
my,
I'm sorry. I'm a narcissist, so I just bring it back
to
me.
No, it's cool. You're not a narcissist. You're just New Jersey. So...
your military experience. So, did you shoot anybody? Let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Well, to be honest with you, let's just be real with it. If I shot anybody, I couldn't tell you anyway. But I will say this. Prior to the military, I am from Miami. Like, not the South Beach part. But the first 48 Cops part. Yeah, think about it. Cops started in Miami. Like, the Cops TV show started in Miami.
You shoot anybody in Miami?
I didn't shoot anybody in Miami because that would be implicating myself in a shooting. But I will say this.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, white boy.
Exactly. We don't trust white people. Those are alternate facts. Just, hashtag alternate facts. We trust white people to cash our checks. Outside of that, though... No, I'm just saying, like, it wouldn't take me killing somebody while I was in the military to make me a hardened soldier. I think what made me a hardened soldier was that fact that my mom is a Jamaican immigrant. Came here with a green card. Now she owns 16 houses in South Florida. No handouts. That is what made my hardened image. So when people say shit like, oh, Shep, you're the boy-looking girl, I'm like, bitch, that's all you got. Because I'm a soldier. I don't know if they didn't tell you. Just want to make sure you understand, I don't give a fuck what you're talking about. Make my own money, Butch Lives Matter. Hashtag Butch Lives Matter, hashtag Street Nip.
Your mama single?
Wow.
She is, but she's so anti-gay. If my mom, had a slip-up where she actually slept with a girl, she'd kill you, then herself. She's like, there's no fucking evidence of this shit. Orgasm to the moon. It'd be great.
Yeah, if you kill yourself soon enough, Jesus doesn't register it in a big book.
Yeah, exactly. And I grew up Pentecostal. Like, here's the thing. Like, if you don't want a lesbian child, the last thing you need to do is raise them in a Pentecostal church.
No, Seventh-day Adventist church. Seventh-day
Which
Adventist
is pretty much the same
long,
thing. It's
man.
Just a different day. So basically, you just... Because here's the thing. What they taught me in the Pentecostal church was, don't show any skin. And I'm like, cool with that. All the way till now. Look at me. Can you see any skin?
Eat natural. Pussy is natural.
This is true. With the sesame seeds.
Yes.
No.
So.
It just got gay. Shit just got gay. Hashtag shit just got gay. Hashtag Butch Lives Matter. Hashtag street nip.
So when did you know that you were a lesbian?
When did I know that I was a lesbian? I knew that I was a lesbian when... One morning when I was probably about 3 or 4, I took a shower and I'm thinking, well, why don't I have a penis? Because bitches are beautiful. Like, that's when I know. It didn't make any sense at that time. And I totally don't want any kind of transitioning.
When did you, admit it to yourself when you were,
To myself?
Okay,
here's a prime example. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I get where you're going with this. I had the biggest crush on my first grade teacher aide. First grade, I was 7, and I would tell, I'm smart. I mean, people at work know, but you guys might not know, but I totally played the game. She's like, 2 + 2? And I'm like, oh, Mrs. Villalobos, because I went to school in Miami and everybody's Spanish. I don't understand. Just so the teacher's aide would come over and pop her titties down on my little desk. And she smelled amazing with the Ginette perfume.
Yeah?
It was great. I remember it like it was yesterday.
I asked you this. This still trips me out because I'm... Okay. When did you have your first orgasm?
Oh, that happened probably my second year in the military. I started dating a Marine, and they are Semper Fidelis.
A Marine lady?
Yes. A Marine lady. I was like, I don't know what's happening, but you're fucking great. Always out front.
And she was down there? How old were you?
Oh, I had to be 21, 22.
You were 22 when you had your first orgasm?
Yes, it was great. Just completely relieved my pelvic muscles.
I had like fucking 700,000 orgasms by the time you had your first. Like,
no, you probably were just skeeting.
22?
Like, orgasm is like somebody touches your G-spot. Did somebody touch your G-spot 700,800 times?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I don't out people. That's just not my game, but I'm thinking you're outed.
Fingers in the butt. Camp counselor. Anyway, next question.
Whoa, hashtag so. Camp counselor. Hashtag Butch Lives Matter. Hashtag street nip. Right. There's another hashtag, but I can't remember.
Finger in the butt.
Hashtag finger in the butt.
Took it out party.
You know, speaking of finger in the butt, they just, do you watch Love and Hip Hop?
No.
Oh, well, they have a character on there. His name is Stevie J. He's a producer for, like, you know, early hip hop, Biggie Smalls, yada yada. And they just started passing around a sex tape of him fucking a white man. And let me tell you where I got offended at. It was a white man. I'm like, first of all, if you're going to go gay all of a sudden, white ass? Right. I mean, I'm totally looking at anal pubes. Not fair.
So you were like into the sex video, but like the white guy?
No, I was like, oh, Stevie J's gay with a white nigga? I said nigga.
See? Gigi always says this on stage. She's like, I'm not attracted to white men. And I'm like, she's allowed to say that. But if I'm like, I'm not into black girls, it's like, what?
No, I'm totally, I totally love the opposite race or whatever, the mainstream race. The thing is, I couldn't actually be with a white woman. Like, we could fuck. But I can't, because I feel like one of these days, I'm going to have one of my completely oppressed moods. You know, where I'm like, oh, the white man at work is trying to hold me down. I'm going to have to come home to this bitch and try to explain it. And it's not going to work out. That's why I can't be with her. Like, I can't, if I can't come home to you after work and talk about how we should beat the white man in his game because you're white, it's going to be horrible. So that's why I date black women and fat black guys.
Why fat black guys?
Because they got titties, too.
Yeah? Is that real? What do you do with their wieners? Hashtag, what do you do with that wiener?
I show them my armoire, and it goes inside. It becomes an innie.
And then you just finger it?
This is totally gay. Like, it's gotten gayer than homosexual.
This is so weird.
Yeah. I don't mean to whole gay it up or anything like that, but, you know.
Is Chuck D a soldier?
I'm not really sure about him. Like, he, you know, back in the day, he's probably something that every butch wanted to be. I'm not sure if he was like an actual soldier.
We're talking about Love and Hip Hop, huh?
Chuck D is old, like NWA or something.
Oh, okay.
Right?
You're a soldier.
Right.
Is Chuck D a soldier?
I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure. What's going on, Xander? How you doing?
Yeah, cool. Just more people. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's
we're doing.
Around. I am now interrupted to your podcast.
Yeah, this is how we do. I love my. There's my redneck, Keegan. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Listen, I have, let me tell you, I just totally make tokens out of the best people I feel like in a certain race or class. Keegan happens to be my top redneck, which means he is my redneck. Gary, he wears better blazers than Hillary Clinton, so he's my top Gary. He's my top Hillary, you know what I'm saying? You know, I just keep doing it with people, you know? Xander has bigger holes in his ear than Stevie J has in his rear. Boom! and hold on. Eric Hollerback has more carpet to munch under his chin than all the carpets I've munched.
Oh, big beard joke.
Mm.
Nice face.
Do Do you know when you're going up, Shep?
I don't know. I might be up right now. They could have just called me. I don't care.
No, you're not up yet.
Here's the thing. I'm not getting paid. Why are you whispering now? We in this shit. Hashtag Bush Lives Matter. Hashtag Street Nip. Hashtag. We're not going to do the rest. How you doing, Miss Lady? Is that your lady right there?
This is my lady.
How you doing? You're so cute. I almost hollered at you. Good thing I didn't. See? God's a comedian. He always... Open as in... Oh, I thought you meant like open as in like y'all do it in the middle of the street.
No.
I'm sorry. No. I am totally an asexual. It's either I do it with myself or I do it with ugly chicks from the Ninth Ward. Shit, I shouldn't have said that. Where's this podcast going?
Tolstoy said that man is guilty when idle. All
right, I have a good one.
The only time a man can be idle and not feel guilty is in the army. Do you agree? Are you always doing stuff when you're in the army, even though if you're idle?
Oh, yeah, all the time. All the time. Let me tell you, when I first went into the military, this is real talk, I thought that I was going to die. And I'm going to tell you why. I, like I said, inner city kid, black, female, gay, poor, went into the quote-unquote white man's army. I don't believe this, but that's what they call it.
Doing the white man's bidding.
Doing the white man's bidding.
Shooting who the white man wants you to shoot.
Shooting who the white man wants me to shoot. Shining who the white man wants me to shine boots. So, the thing is, I thought I was going to die. I was like, there's no way, you know, my parents are going to ever know if Uncle Sam killed me because, hell, it's Uncle Sam. And so, my recruiter happened to be, he probably got saved like maybe a week before I met him. And he told me that. He said, listen, I know you want to join the military. I just got saved a week ago, so I'm not into lying. And my first statement and question was, and I said to him, hey, look, I'm gay. Are they going to kill me? And he told me, no, they won't kill you as long as you don't ask, don't tell, because that was the policy in place while I was in. And so I was totally terrified. And so I never caught eye contact with anybody. My first 4 years in the military, I never looked any woman in the eye because I didn't want anybody to think that I was crossing the line and I didn't want to get kicked out dishonorably. And then my fifth through eighth year in the military, in the barracks, living in the barracks overseas, more females knocked on my door. And I'm talking about high-ranking officers trying to proposition me for sex than I've ever been propositioned for since. It was crazy. So
that don't ask, don't tell policy
kind of only applies to enlisted.
It was like the super gayest policy ever.
Yeah, it was.
Because everyone was just like, cool.
It was like, don't tell, don't ask, don't tell. And then it moved to don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue, and don't something else. It's like four things.
But
don't act and don't pursue or something like that.
So like a late night door knock, we're like, hey, you want to munch this box right now?
Yeah, that happened all the time. And I never took them up on the offer. I totally was straight in their minds, on paper, for the first 4 years. The last 4 years, on the other hand, were completely gayed up for me. And that is why I got out. To be honest with you, I probably would still be in the military if I wasn't terrified of blemishing my entire military career.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So if there was a different policy, you'd still be out there?
Now there is a different policy, yeah. But I got out beforehand, you know, because I just didn't want to ruin it. I mean, if you think about it, like even right now to this second, while I'm sitting here with you 12 years after I've exited the military 10 days from now, I still get military benefits.
Let me ask you this. Was it a tough transition to be like programmed Pentecostal and then to also have the government tell you that this is a bad thing to do and then to come out? Like that was tricky for you?
So coming out, that
was
happened.
Was there like a lot of guilt associated with that?
Oh no, here's why. Because first of all, coming out happened prior to, coming out happened in between being Pentecost and enlisting in the military. Pentecost growing up, about 12 years old, I stopped going to church. 15 years old, I got my first girlfriend. 16 years old, I came out to my mother. 18 years old, I joined the military. So I will say this. My mother taught me something way before any of that happened, before I even realized I was Pentecost. And here's what she said. She said two things. She said, one, I understand that during Black History Month, they go through all these, you know, slave stories about all these black heroes, but you are in no way oppressed. If you want to be anything you want to be in this world, all you have to do is work for it. That's one. The other thing she told me was, as long as no one is paying your bills, you can do what you want. So at that point, I was free from oppression, regardless if it was the Pentecost Church or the military.
Do you think there should be mandatory military service?
Absolutely. You know why? Because there's way too many lazy men. You know how I know? Because I'm always taking care of a baby mama and her bullshit-ass kids. Because some guy just left.
I did that. I dated a girl with a kid, but then she cheated on me a bunch of times.
Here's the thing. I don't mind taking care of kids, but when your son's 17 and I kick his ass in Madden and then he uppercuts me because he's stronger than me, I have a problem with that.
Damn. That's what it's like being...
That's what it's like being a lesbian.
Lesbian and knife war and shit, Jesus.
Exactly. I buy the diapers, I feed this motherfucking milk, I buy him PlayStation games, I buy him PlayStation 4s, and then he's like, fuck you, bitch. Pow.
Damn.
That's it.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I kind of did. But I didn't tell his mother. I told his mother, fuck you, bitch, and I was out.
Now you're out? You dating anybody now?
I just have friends. I don't date anymore, probably because I'm still married. I'm going to get a divorce, but I haven't yet, and I just don't want the bitch to have anything on me, so I don't make anything official with anybody else. Divorce court's a bitch, by the way.
Gary knows about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Gary's divorce.
I gotta pee. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Are you sure? Are we? Are, yeah, can we wrap
we're
it?
We're almost wrapped. Okay, we can wrap it.
I'm ready. Whenever you're ready.
It's another episode of Highway Motherfucker Diary in the bag with Chef Kelly, episode 166. Final things you want to say?
Yes. Hashtag Butch Lives Matter. Hashtag Street Nip. Hashtag Onward and Upward. That's what we're going to do. Hey, did you go on yet?
Not yet.
All right, cool. There's a new comic tonight. What's your name, bro?
My name is Patrick. Very not funny. This is,
Patrick, very not
Patrick,
funny.
First name
Patrick,
only.
Are you Jewish?
This is I'm not.
Oh, you're never going to win this game. You better be Jewish or black. He's Irish?
I think so.
All right, well, you're Irish with without a dick print, so you're losing. All right, I'm Shep Kelly, y'all. Follow me on everything. Shep Kelly Comedy on Twitter. Shep Kelly on Instagram. Shep Kelly on Facebook. And Shep Kelly on YouTube. Follow me. I never get naked, but it's always interesting.